Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, like me, you probably are routinely confronted by that inner voice that pops up in your mind from time to time to warn, I'm not smart enough to accomplish this or that goal. Or that outstanding person I'd love to meet won't accept me and will brush me off and humiliate me. Or we'll never earn enough money to send our kids to college and to retire to the lifestyle that we crave. Or how about one like my boss won't like my idea for improving the department workflow and I'll be in her doghouse if I even suggest it. At middle age, every one of us has a well-entrenched inner critic that may have been implanted years ago, maybe when we were small children. And your critic's sole intent seems to be to hold you back from making any bold moves or any experimentation that might move your life forward to a new level of joy and fulfillment. And its warning is, oh, you might be rejected, or you might look foolish, or you might suffer humiliation or upset the status quo that you're used to, even if you're not happy with the way things are today. It's kind of self-defeating, isn't it? But our inner critic talks us out of so many sound, low-risk, high-potential opportunities, and our guest today warns that it's not possible to completely silence this inner critic, and I guess maybe at times we shouldn't, because at times it may become the voice of reason occasionally. But the good news is she says that you can take steps daily to outsmart or even ignore that self-limiting inner voice for a lifetime. And our guest is Marnie Spencer Devlin, author of the new paradigm-shifting book, The Iceberg Principles, The Truth About the Universe and Your Place in It. And Marnie has a personal story that if you watch on her website, it'll knock your socks off. She overcame unimaginable adversities as a child and a young adult, molestation, rape, drug addiction, homelessness, and even prison. She rose from the ashes to found and lead a successful multi-million-dollar marketing company, only to become incapacitated in 2006 with a life-threatening disease, and doctors told her she had 1 year to live, so she sat down and wrote her best-selling autobiography, Crawling Into the Light. And today, Marnie is an inspirational speaker, a best-selling author, and a personal mentor, and she's truly a phoenix and a wonderful example of how to overcome adversity at middle age or any age. And hello, Marnie, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Well, hello there. It's such a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you for having me, Roy.
Well, to inspire our audience, please describe briefly how your deadly diagnosis in 2006 and the financial crisis in 2008 actually, in hindsight, was your greatest gift ever.
It certainly was. It certainly was, right? Well, as you just briefly went over what my story was, and it was a pretty crazy one. And, you know, I overcome so much as a child and as a young adult, as you said. And then I became absolutely successful. And for 20 years, my life was just an absolute fairy tale. Yeah. And I really thought I had overcome all the bad stuff. Although, on the inside, I was never really all that happy. Huh. Because the things that had happened to me as a child, when you're supposed to be, and that's true for everyone, whatever you go through as a child, when you're going through tough stuff, your brain's not developing as it should, and you don't get that sense of self-worth. Yeah. Something comes along, and it doesn't have to be as dramatic as it was for me, but something comes along so you just don't feel you're worth all that, or you don't develop that sense of personal safety. Yeah. And so that's how it was for me. So no matter how many millions I had in the bank, I never felt completely safe. I always thought, oh, tomorrow it could all end.
Yeah,
the economy could turn, whatever, it could just go.
There's a lot of wealthy people who are successful on the outside who are very fragile, like you say, because they haven't really discovered the inner strength that they have. And so they rely so much on outward trappings and possessions, things like that.
Absolutely, and it does not make you happy. It does not make you feel safe. And the same with worth. It didn't matter how many accomplishments I had. I never really felt all that great because on the inside, I didn't feel that good about me. So that inner critic that you were talking about kept to all the times like, who the heck do you think you are doing this or doing that? And it was really, it was a struggle all the time. Yeah. Didn't matter how successful I was. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that feeling.
You point out that human beings were a lot like icebergs and only 4% of us shows. Please explain what you mean by that, because that's certainly...
Well, that's the thing that I realized when I wrote my book, because when I wrote my book, I really thought, my first book, Crawling Into the Light, I really thought it was going to be the last thing I ever do. They had only given me a year to live.
Yeah.
And so I wrote this book, and during that, when you have a sentence like that hanging over your head, that's it, you're going to die, you do a lot of asking questions, and you do a lot of praying, a lot of meditating. And that's when I came across that concept of the iceberg principles. Yeah. And the concept is really very much, you know what an iceberg looks like, right, Ray? Very, very little shows on top. Only about 4% show on top. And I challenge
you. The Titanic discovered that.
Yes, it's so true. Very, very little shows on top, no matter how big it seems. There's always much, much more underneath it. And I challenge listeners, take an ice cube and float it in a glass of water and take a look of how very little shows on top and how much flows at the bottom, because that's true no matter how big that ice cube is.
Yeah.
And what I say is that we are much like icebergs in that we, the part that shows about us, meaning our body and our mind, everything that we are here in this physical world is only about 4% of who we really are.
I think it's
who we really are is consciousness.
What is fascinating to me when you point out, and it's so true, that those people who are real physically attractive or, say, maybe real strong or athletic often rely too much on the physical trappings when they're young, and a lot of them don't really develop to be that outstanding when they get older because they're relying too much on what they can see and what other people are attracted to.
Absolutely. The outer world will fade.
And
who we are physically, we're all going to die. The outer world will fade away. It
and
passes.
Then there's the people that depend on their intellect because they maybe weren't, they're nerdy when they're young or something, so they depend strictly on their own intelligence, and people are impressed by that. And then later maybe they add material possessions to impress people, like a big house or a fancy car or whatever, a big bank account. And that really
is...
That really
that's not
happening.
It either.
No.
That's not it either, because it's still part of the physical world. Everything that exists in time and space will pass away.
Yes.
But that's not all we are. That's why I say we're icebergs, because 96% of who we are is consciousness.
Well, please explain what does comprise that 96%, that submerged and invisible part of us.
It's the consciousness that we are. It's the presence that we are. And if you close your eyes, you can feel your own presence.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's always been with you, and that is who we are, and that's beyond time, beyond space. It's it's beyond dimension. And so that's the part that lives forever.
Yeah, I think you described that as our spiritual DNA, I think, in this.
Absolutely. Well, the spiritual DNA, by that I mean that everyone is here for a reason.
Yeah.
Everyone has some reason to be here. Everyone has a role to play.
Yeah.
And just like you have your physical DNA, and that gives you certain propensities. You might be good at football, or you might be good at sewing, or whatever your physical DNA determines your outside, but it doesn't define who you are. What defines you are your characteristics and your strength.
Fascinating the way you say it, and it's so true that we may be attracted initially to a person based upon their looks or their intellect, but it is really that inner character, the personality and character, that determines whether we want to become friends or even a soulmate or a life partner with somebody.
Absolutely. Isn't that true? The looks, as we said earlier, the looks fade away anyway. The person that you want to be with as a life partner, that's their inner qualities is what counts. But the inner qualities, they don't have dimension. They're not, you can't say, oh, they're in the hand or they're in the head or they're, because they're not anywhere. They're not dimensional. But that's what makes up who we really are. And that's where the distinction comes in. We have to recognize that we are not our body and our intellect.
Well, how does your iceberg theory apply to those of us at middle age who are seeking to find genuine happiness, wealth, and fulfillment in life's second half? How did we explore and really determine what's inside and what we're missing out on by all the surface distractions we have?
Well, that's a very, very good question, Roy. That's what I mean by the spiritual DNA. We have to ask yourself, what is it that you love to do the most? You have to listen to your heart.
Yeah.
Because you are here for a reason. And the things that you are meant to do with your life are the things that you're best at, and they're the things that you love to do the most. So I advise people, find what you're best at and what you love to do and develop that.
Yeah.
And leave the stuff that you're not that good at, leave it be. Leave your weaknesses.
So true.
They're not your thing.
As you say, if you're doing what you love with your life, the money and the accolades will follow.
Everything comes. When you chase in the money, you're putting the cart before the horse.
That's true.
If you're chasing your purpose and the reason you are here, the happiness and the joy and the money will come in due time, in due course. You can't hold it off.
Yeah.
There is no way to hold it off.
Say I have a major problem or some big issue I'm dealing with in my life. How can I meet that challenge? Tell me how I would do that by relying on my consciousness or my inner being rather than just on my intellect.
You don't rely on the intellect because the intellect will always lie to you. The intellect, that's that inner critic, and it wants to keep you safe. It wants to keep you away from any kind of growth, making any kind of changes because it's afraid.
It's safe by its definition.
Yeah, by its definition, it just wouldn't want you to sit on the couch all day long and do nothing because that's where you're safe. But we are here for a reason, and it's important to realize that everything that happens for a reason as well.
Yeah.
So if you're going through challenges, realize that these challenges are there for you to realize that every life challenge is there for you to realize that you are really better than you thought you were.
Yeah. I love the way you say, I think it was on your website somewhere, you say, try to feel your way into the answer rather than confronting it with pure reason. And that makes so much sense to me. You know, that's kind of like relying on your instinct or feeling your way.
The instinct is the voice of the 96%.
That's that
gut feeling. That's the voice of the 96%. Your eyes and ears, that's for the physical world.
Yeah.
And you know that. That's why I say don't completely ignore it, because if your intellect tells you don't step into the street, there's a truck coming, you want to hear that.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes that inner critic may be right, like keeping you out of the street when you were going to take a mad dash across to the other side.
Right. The alarms will go off and say, yeah, no, you don't have enough time. Don't do that. And you definitely want that. You want that information. But I look at the inner critic, at the intellect, sort of like the computer for our physical body.
Yeah,
and you need it. It's your interface with the world.
Yeah.
But it knows nothing of the 96%. It knows nothing of consciousness.
Yeah.
It thinks you're just this little thing that's in danger all the time. And the fact is, it's true. A truck could come over and run you over any moment. And that's how the intellect sees life. It sees you exposed to the vicissitudes.
Yeah,
but it doesn't
it
know
sees a lot of phantom trucks.
There's a lot of phantom
there.
Trucks. That's true. But if you focus on what your heart is telling you and what you love to do and the things that you're really good at, that's the voice that tells you why you're here in the first place and what you're supposed to do with your life. And that's where the joy comes in. And when you recognize that you are not your intellect, that that's just your computer, I like to call it the computer because that really illustrates that's not you. It's just like the desktop on your, it's like the computer on your desktop. it's not who you are. And it gives you advice every now and then, but if it tells you something that's in direct opposition of what your heart is telling you, then your heart is the one that's correct.
Yeah, and it only feeds out advice what you feed in. So if you feed in your preordained conclusion that you've already made based on the inner critic, you're going to get an answer that ties into that, which may not be the right one.
Oh, well, absolutely. And the subconscious mind, as we know, is a magnificent machine. I mean, it's a fabulous computer. It recorded everything that's ever happened to you in your life from the very beginning to all the way up to now. And every experience has changed it a little bit. You had a bad experience, you're kind of like burnt. Okay, I won't do that anymore.
Yeah.
That's all, it's all good stuff, but you don't want to listen to it for making all your decisions from then on, because that would means you would never want to move forward. And that's what your intellect kind of tells you, doesn't it? It doesn't want you to ever move forward. So you don't want to listen to it. You cannot turn it off. You don't want to turn it off. It's your computer. You need it.
So
but
if you,
you don't
can't
have
completely
to
silence that inner critic, what are the steps you take to outsmart it?
Well, you recognize that it's what it is. You recognize the voice for what it is, and you hear it, and you go, oh, there we go. That's just my computer talking.
Yeah.
And then you can make a conscious, informed choice. Do I want to listen to that voice? Is it appropriate right now? Or is it just doing its scared little thing trying to hold me back?
Yeah, I think that's the key that so many people miss out on when they talk about the power of positive thinking, or they talk about the secret and all those kind of things, that you really have to recognize that inner critic and recognize it for what it is, because if you don't know it's there and you don't acknowledge it's there and you don't say, hey, I hear my inner critic pulling me back, then you're really probably not going to succeed with that positive thinking kick.
No, thinking is still thinking. Thinking comes from the mind, from the intellect.
Yeah.
And the intellect, there is really no, that's why all this self-help stuff doesn't work.
Yeah.
You go and you do a program and rah, rah, and yes, for a while you go, man, this really helped. But 30 days, 6 months, a year from now, it's forgotten.
No, I've read a few of those books in my life.
Well, we all have. You know, we've all tried to do ways. But with the iceberg principles, there is a real solution, because you're not trying to change the subconscious mind.
No.
You become consciously aware that that is not who you are.
Well, I think that's a great point, that so many people talk about changing the subconscious mind, and that's a very good point you make, that you're not really trying to change the subconscious mind. You're recognizing, you learn more about what's in there and why it's in there, but then you move forward to find that 96% that's still missing. Because I guess the subconscious mind is really not part of the 96%.
No, not at all. Not at all. It has nothing to do with it. The subconscious mind is as much a part of you as your computer is a part of you. Your computer sits on your desktop, and you need it and you want it. You have to check your email on it. It's very important. But it's not a part of you.
Yeah.
And that's the same with the subconscious mind. It's not really a part of who you are. You're the 96%. The things that define you, your character, all those invisible things we've talked about before, the reason your wife married you, that's you. But that's not physical.
Yeah.
That's not the physical part. Who you really are is not physical, and you have to recognize that you're not your body, that you're not your intellect, and then you can make a conscious, informed choice to listen to it when it's appropriate, and to discount it when it's not appropriate.
And the other key thing, I think, point you make is that 96% is connected to the intelligence throughout the universe, or some people call it God or the spirit or whatever you want to call it.
Exactly.
It really goes beyond yourself, and trying to live in that island of that 4% and succeed just based on your own personal intellect and personal qualities really isn't going to get you anywhere except frustration.
No, it's not. The subconscious mind only has information that it's accumulated during its lifetime through learning, through experiences. That's all it knows. But if you think about, where does an idea come from?
Yeah.
An idea is this sudden spark. You go, oh, I have an idea. But an idea isn't just a spark. An idea is a completed blueprint of something new. Where does that come from?
Yeah.
Certainly not from the subconscious mind, because it's not based on former and present knowledge.
No,
it's something completely
true.
New.
Yeah,
that's something that comes from the all-knowingness, from the 96%, from all of it.
It comes from the outside, and it comes to you as an original thought, not something that's somewhere buried deep within. Because you didn't.
It comes from the knowing.
Thomas Edison didn't learn to invent the light bulb when he was a baby.
There you go. And it couldn't have been based on any information that he already had.
Yeah.
So it was a completely, it was inspiration. It comes from, that word spirit is right in there. It comes from spirit, comes from consciousness. It comes from the allness in which we exist. That's also where the iceberg is a wonderful concept, because here we are individual pieces of consciousness.
Yeah.
Just like the iceberg is frozen water that's immersed in more water.
That's right.
So we are individual consciousness that's immersed in universal consciousness.
Yeah, that's another good point.
Exactly. We can have access to all that knowing, to all that conscious access to it, to knowing that we have not previously had. That's how I downloaded this idea of the iceberg principles.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything I did.
No.
I thought I was dying. I was just trying to write my book down when I had this knowing, and I instinctively knew it was big, but I didn't even know how big it was until I sat down and wrote that book, which took me another year.
Oh.
Because it truly came downloaded from the 96%. And it was fun writing it, I tell you, because I was learning as I was writing.
Well, it would be fun reading it, too. What's the best way that someone can purchase your latest book, The Iceberg Principles?
Well, both my books are available on my website,
which
is MarnieSpencerDevlin.com. Marnie is M-A-R-N-I. Spencer is S-P-E-N-C-E-R. Devlin is D-E-V, as in Victor, L-I-N. Marnie,
you better
Spencer,
take that
Devlin.
Down, because there'll be a test after.
There'll be a test after. I know it's an obnoxiously long name, isn't it? So either MarnieSpencerDevlin.com or TheIcebergPrinciple.com or CrawlingIntoTheLight.com. And the books are also available on Amazon in paperback as well as in Kindle.
Well, Marnie is certainly a great example for anyone facing major adversity and overcoming it, or for someone simply dissatisfied with life at middle age. And you also, I know, offer counseling and other products on your website, MarnieSpencerDevlin.com. So I would urge people to go to that. And please watch that video, because that's certainly inspiring, if anything is. I'm sure most of us don't have anything in our lives that even closely parallel what Marnie has overcome, and yet she's a wonderful inspiration to all of us. And I urge you to preview also my self-help book for people of middle age, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up. And I've overcome a few challenges, nothing like Marnie, but I offer a comprehensive, practical, step-by-step roadmap that's loaded with self-help exercises that can help carry you from today to the joyful, fulfilling career, lifestyle, and relationships you richly deserve, and that's www.middleagerenewal.com, or you can find the book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, on Amazon. And thank you so much, Marnie, for your inspirational appearance, and I urge everyone to go to that website and check out her books and her life experience.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. It was really an interesting and intellectual. Well, actually, I guess intellectual is not a good thing in this case, discussion, but I truly enjoyed it.
You're violating your own.
I am violating my own, my own edict.
It's universal knowledge that floated into our minds is what it is.
Well, it did, though, didn't it?
96%. And thank you so much, and have a great day.
Same to you. Thanks, all right. Bye-bye.
Well, a lot of us at middle age presently are or may soon join the sandwich generation, and that's what they call those people who are responsible for caring both for their own children and for an aged parent or loved one. And here's a pleasant surprise. Caregiving may help you live longer. That's the surprising finding of a new Johns Hopkins study, which found that family caregivers had an 18% reduced rate of death compared to non-caregivers. The secret, per researchers, if highly stressful situations can be avoided or managed effectively, caregiving may actually offer some health benefits. And then, of course, the obvious next question is, given the exhausting demands of caring for a loved one, how do I, as a caregiver, avoid stressful situations or manage them? And our next guest is here to help answer that question. Our guest is Joseph August. He's an esteemed life coach who helps people live their lives with purpose, passion, and possibility, as he puts it. And he's a noted healthcare innovator and caregiver advocate. He's an award-winning author and keynote presenter, and he's author of a brand new book titled Coaching for Caregivers, How to Reach Out Before You Burn Out, and I like that title. Hello, Yosef, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Oh, thank you. I love that introduction, Roy, and I'm so happy to be on the show today.
Well, going beyond the pure numbers of that study, in your expert opinion, why is it that caregiving, with all its demands, may actually increase a caregiver's lifespan? What are some of the benefits, perhaps hidden benefits?
Right. Well, I mean, one is that there is a clear purpose. That is, I mean, whatever else larger purpose that we have in our lives when we're taking care of a loved one. I mean, it really, like, you really do have to get up in the morning.
Having a clear purpose is so important, like you say, to living a full and fulfilling life.
Yeah, and so that's that's really a big deal, and that you really have to, really mobilize yourself. There are other benefits, and none of this is to try to sugarcoat anything and to dismiss all of the challenges and that come along with caregiving, but there is an intimacy. There's an experience. I had experiences with each of my parents and I was mostly caregiving for them from afar. They lived in Florida. I lived in New York.
Yeah.
My sister, who was the other potential caregiver, lived in Jerusalem.
Wow.
And with my father, I wound up for some extended periods of time needing to leave my family and leave my business and be with him. And we had some of the most intimate time in our lives.
Yeah, if they still have their faculties, it's a great time to reconnect after all that absence and being apart. And I would think that, just sitting down one-on-one and really discussing the past and reconnecting would be a great benefit.
Can I say one other thing about that? Because you were saying if they still have their faculties?
Yeah.
Right? So many of us, are taking care of parents who have dementia.
Yeah.
I have Alzheimer's, okay? So I happen to have been fortunate that with my mother, her dementia was in a very positive kind of a loop, So, but what I experienced with her was that she was enormously grateful and so she kept repeating how grateful she was.
Yeah.
But it was a teaching for me about being grateful and choosing to be happy.
Yeah, and being patient, teaching patience and loving concern, is all those things are benefits as well, I would think.
That's really true. And so that was like just an important, like of the other pieces, like being in the moment.
Yeah. I would think another benefit would be it teaches us to say no to a lot of the extraneous activities that we're always getting involved in. And now that we have this added responsibility, we may learn to say no to some things we really don't want to do.
Right, but what I really want to encourage caregivers to do is to start saying yes also.
Yeah. I don't mean not to say yes.
No, I don't
yes
mean
to the
no,
right
I know that
things,
you don't mean
no
that.
To the wrong things.
No, but what I mean by that is, I mean, yeah, so here we clear the deck and do that.
Yeah.
But what I really want to encourage, it's not exactly a sidelight here in terms of the message of my book, which is that the saying yes to yourself and the saying yes to your loved one has to do with having a life as well as a caregiving role.
Yeah. Well, your basic message is no one can do this alone, and you indicate there's plenty of love and support available. Why do you think it is that so many caregivers are reluctant to reach out? What is it within us that says we should be martyrs and do it all on our own?
Yeah. Well, let me suggest something to you. I mean, there are some that I can roll it out. I call it receiving deficit disorder. Okay. Huh. All of us, you know, we need to have, you know, with all of these syndromes and disorders that they name, yeah. you know, ADD and everything else.
yeah.
So, I mean, everybody needs to have some kind of a deficit. We need to have something. So I invented something I call RDD, Receiving Deficit Disorder. It was based on, you know, I have an experience with doing serious outcomes research with Johns Hopkins, but
yeah.
I did this one on my own. My research consisted of turning to a woman riding next to me on an Amtrak train, and I said, excuse me, could you tell me if you think people have more trouble giving or receiving?
Huh.
This is a stranger, right?
Yeah.
So she said, receiving, of course. That was my research.
Yeah.
In research, you would call it N equals 1. So I,
yeah.
out of that, I invented RDD, Receiving Deficit Disorder.
Yeah, I have plenty of those deficit disorders myself.
yeah, yeah. I mean, really, you know, it's almost like the last thing we think of. So
yeah.
people don't reach out because they think no one else can do it. I mean, particularly in the caregiving.
Yeah.
They know their loved one best. They know their needs. They know that their loved one won't trust anybody else, or that's what they believe. And they think it might be an imposition on other people.
Yeah. It's so often in families, one child takes the responsibility and then kind of shuts the other children out and then develops a resentment that they didn't do more, I think, it seems like.
I think you really describe a real dynamic there. I mean, it's very, very often. It's very that happens, and it's very rare that siblings allow themselves to collaborate and be kind of a tag team.
Yeah.
And just one other, maybe we can get back to that, but I want to say a couple of other reasons you were asking about why people, you know, are reluctant to reach out. Loss of privacy. There's a sense that for themselves and their loved one, if I begin to reach out and let people know what's happening, everybody's going to be in our business, and including at times I don't want and from people I don't necessarily want.
Yeah.
And my privacy is really important, and I have a feeling,
especially in the internet era, it's such a sensitive subject these days.
I know, it's why I stay off Facebook pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, except for, you know, for business things.
Yeah.
But it's because I, you know, and then there's, I'm just saying. So there are a number of reasons. We each have our own reasons why we might not reach out. But I think that the business of privacy is really a big one.
Yeah.
And I might say that. It is something that we can manage.
Yeah.
Just like with Facebook, you can set your privacy settings.
Yeah.
In my book, I have something I call a declaration of interdependence.
I like that.
And it basically tells the world what you need, how you want people to help you, what you don't want, what kind of attitudes you want coming towards you, what kind of attitudes and behavior you don't want coming towards you, and whether you use mine or not. It's a prop. It's a catalyst.
Yeah, that seems like an excellent way to overcome that resistance to reaching out by setting those parameters and letting them be known.
And one other thing, Tom, is that that it helps the people that you're reaching out to know how you would like them to come towards you.
Yes, and, that's a very good point.
You know, there's a woman, Letty Cotter-Pogrebin. She wrote a book about how to talk to people who are sick. It's really an excellent book.
Yeah.
And how to talk to friends who are sick.
Yeah.
And I went to her book talk, and she talked about all the kinds of ways that happened to her when she was dealing with breast cancer. And I asked her from the audience, during all the time you were dealing with this, did anybody ask you how you would like them to come towards you, you would like them to speak to you?
Yeah.
And she said, never.
Huh.
It would have been so good. But so it helps people to know.
Yes, it does, definitely. Well, tell us about you mentioned care sites, which are free online forums for caregivers and friends and family, and their many benefits. How does someone, say I was just starting out as a caregiver, how would I find one of these care sites? Or tell us a little about those.
Yeah, so the care, and I actually, I I coined that term. It's a lot easier to say care sites than to say free websites that you can use to you know, that are available to you as a caregiver or as a family. Let me just mention them slowly so people might want to write them down.
Yeah, very definitely.
So one is called Lots of Helping Hands, and Lots is LOTSA, Lots of
like
Helping
that.
Hands. It's an excellent site, and I've participated personally, and I'm involved in using that one for supporting a friend of mine. So Lots of Helping Hands, and you can find that easily on the web. The second one is called Caring Bridge.
Is that a Caring Bridge?
No, it's just Caring Bridge.
Oh, just Caring Bridge, okay.
Right? And the third one is called Care Pages.
Huh.
And so each one of them is easy to set up and easy to manage it. And you may want to find a 12-year-old to help you do it because they are seen to be, you know, my grandson, Harry, would be the expert on it. But what they do is that, and they, because they're like a template, and they allow you to just get on and do it without spending a lot of time. They allow
great.
You to first of all, you know, the privacy settings I was talking about.
Yeah.
They allow you to decide who you want to be able to participate on your care site. Whether it's your intimate circle, it might just be your family. It just might be your family and close friends, or it might be wider. It might be the congregation that your spiritual community. Or it might be in some of the families that I interviewed for my book. It was the world, and they had thousands of people coming to their site. So one of the things is setting up your privacy settings.
Yeah.
But what the care sites allow you to do is without, you know, putting out a lot of emails and returning calls and all of that kind of stuff, it allows you to tell people what you want them to know.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that's one thing. Another thing, it allows you to tell them what you need.
Yeah.
And one of them, in fact, I think two of the sites, I know Lots of Helping Hands has this, they have a calendar. So you say, you know what? I need my son Ricky picked up at 3:30 on Thursday to take him to a soccer game, you know, or I need somebody to walk my dog, you know, at 5 o'clock on Tuesday, or it would be really nice to have a hot meal delivered on Friday night to my doorstep, and so those things are able, you know, to happen. But the coming in the
thing that people actually would want to do that kind of thing to help out. You wouldn't. Your general feeling would be nobody would want to walk my dog, for instance.
Right. So that's a really good one because people who care about you, it would be great for them. All I have to do is walk the dog, and I'll be helpful.
Yeah.
You know what
true.
I'm saying? I don't have to put my life on hold to help my friend. No, I can show up and walk the dog. And that's
the good news. The bad news is it's a vicious pit bull.
Yeah, right. Well, we won't talk about that, right? Okay. As long as it was fed just before the walk, you're all right. But I'm saying but the other part of this is that people get a chance to send love messages, affirmations, prayer.
Oh, great.
Right? And believe it or not, you know, we talk about why do caregivers live longer. Well, the people, even indirectly here, the wider circle, people have let families know that their lives have been changed by being invited to help.
Yeah.
Or by hearing the heroic struggle of the person, you know, the courageous struggle, the journey that the person who's going through this is going through, whether they're going to overcome it or whether they're going it's going to be, you know, terminal.
Yeah.
So many people have said that their perspective on living has significantly changed participating.
Yeah. There may not be many left, but how about those caregivers that really don't have access to a computer or are really uncomfortable with computers or smartphones or laptops? All that kind of good stuff. How does someone like that reach out if they don't really like to use a computer much?
Good. Yeah, that's a really good question. So you're really fortunate if you happen to be a member of a congregation or a local community group or some kind of organization. One of the families, I featured three stories in my book about families who reached out, caregivers who lived, reached out in very different ways. In this case, the husband had throat cancer, and because of the radiation and the chemo, he could not swallow, and he needed to be fed through a tube. And she was at wit's end, and she was absolutely desperate because she felt he was dying in front of her, and she couldn't do anything about it. And she was at an informal gathering at somebody's house, and somebody said, "How are you doing?" And she said, well, she broke down, and she said, "What was going on?" And she says, "I need somebody to show me how to use the feeding tube. It doesn't look the same way as they showed me in the hospital."
Oh.
And somebody in that group, somebody she didn't even know, and it was a small group, said, "Oh, I'm a nurse. I'll go home with you tonight, and I'll show you how to do it."
Oh, great.
Okay. So, I mean, that just kind of happened like that.
Yeah.
And then she went to their local food co-op the next day and had the similar conversation. And I mean, this sounds like it is coming out of a movie, but this is a true thing. And the person said, "I'm a doctor. I'm off on Tuesdays, and I'll come and feed him on Tuesday." I didn't say that. The reason that the wife couldn't feed him all the time is because she was commuting about 100 miles a day each way to New York to work. So midday, his life depended on being fed.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is that all of a sudden, through the local congregation, she had every day of the week covered. And, yeah, they used the computer just to use an email list, but it would have been the same thing if it was word of mouth.
Yeah, you can obviously find somebody that has a computer to give you those lists and things like that. But
that is, and I think that's a very important thing. You don't have to do this stuff yourself. You're one step away from, would you send out an email thing for me? Would you do this?
Yeah.
Would you go on your congregation's email list and say, "This is what we need"?
Yeah.
And you don't even have to be a member of that friend's congregation.
Yeah. No, it's there are people out there you can reach out to, and you don't have to have a computer. What certainly helps. Well, let's say I'm a complete novice to caregiving, and give us a couple of the smartest and dumbest things to do when you're reaching out. What would be a smartest thing to do, for instance?
All right. Well, get clear about what you want and need.
That's an obvious first step. Before
I know, but it sounds so obvious. But
I'm not.
Yeah, and like with Phyllis Berman, when I was talking about the wife in that story, when she realized she needed somebody to come midday and feed her, that's what she needed.
Yeah.
The rest just flowed out, and the second thing is get clear about the way you want people to offer help and support.
Yeah.
And so that it really, it's sort of like if you're picturing eating a meal. Well, how do you need your food to be prepared?
To
be able to be enjoyable to you. The third is what I was saying before. Set your privacy settings. Let people know your limits, your boundaries. Fourth, tell people up front if you're not comfortable talking about the medical condition of your loved one, in order to honor their wishes for privacy. So you have to tell people,
Yeah. What would be a couple of the dumbest things you could do? A
couple of the dumbest. Yeah, I drew these, of course, from my own behavior and experience as well.
It's a good source for me, too, when I'm talking about dumb things.
It's really, okay. Assume it's best for you to tough it out alone.
Yeah, that's a dumb thing to do for sure.
How about assume that other people know what you need?
Oh, yeah. It's another easy trap to fall into.
Focus on not hurting other people's feelings.
Yeah, you can't worry too much about that when you're in a caregiving role and you're worried, obviously, primarily about the loved one.
Yeah. You want a few more?
A couple more.
Be afraid of asking too much of other people.
Yeah. Yeah, you can always, if you ask too much, they can always turn you down, and you can get what they have. It's silly when you're afraid that you'll offend somebody by asking for too much.
Yes, I'll choose one of my favorite of the dumbest things. Feel like you have to suffer fools.
Yeah, that's true. You don't ever have to do that. But well, in the brief time left, tell us about your book, Caring for Caregivers. How can somebody obtain that? And
Coaching for Caregivers, How to Reach Out Before You Burn Out. It's available on Amazon, and you can get it in print, and you can also get it in Kindle.
Hi.
And if you get it in Kindle, if you go on Veterans Day, in honor of the military family caregivers, you can get it free.
Yeah, that's next
Kindle.
Monday, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
The 11th.
So I encourage you, if you get it free, why not do that? But the first part of the book is about reaching in and really, you know, really seeing what you need and how privacy and those kinds of things. The second part is about how do you reach out and how do you use the care sites. And the third part is a lot of resources for families to use. And talking about I was mentioning to Roy earlier about that Amazon, there's the Amazon reviewer themselves.
Yeah.
They have just sent a beautiful review of the book, and if I can quote the last sentence of this review today.
Yeah, it really sums up the benefit of the book. And go ahead and
thank you. So it said, "This excellent resource might just save your life, the life of someone you love, as well as your sanity." And I would emphasize the sanity part.
Yeah,
you know,
that book, that's precisely the kind of book that we encourage listeners to check out on this program. It's at least not a bunch of theory and gobbledygook and stuff. It's good practical advice that that you can use and apply to your own life. And also, Yosef didn't mention it, but he offers coaching services, which I think is of very much interest to midlifers like us. In fact, he offers transition coaching on job and career change, starting new enterprises, and one near and dear to my heart, when you're nearing retirement, how you plan for your retirement years. And so many people neglect to do that and then end up really at loose ends once they retire. And what's the website people can go to find out about your coaching?
Right. I love it. Thank you for asking. So it's www.yestolifecoaching. It's all those words.
I like that name.
Yestolifecoaching.com.
Yeah, and I would highly recommend if you're interested in that transition coaching that you go to that website, and you also check out Yosef's new book. What's that name again?
Coaching for Caregivers, How to Reach Out Before You Burn Out.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and best of success with your new book. And I think anyone that is either currently in a caregiver role or about to assume one, that's definitely a book you should check out. And thank you for joining us, Yosef.
Thank you so much, Roy. I loved our conversation.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.